Can you hear me? I can't hear you.
Yeah, it was on mute. Sorry. Hi.
There we go. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, not bad.
So it's the first time that I'm joining.
Oh, really? Well, under very strange circumstances.
Yeah, true. Very weird circumstances.
So you remember, where are you from?
So I just applied for membership.
Right.
And yeah, so I was kind of like invited to join it, to join this chat. And mm-hmm. I just wanted to see, you know, what's all about and just maybe, you know, to answer some questions.
Oh, absolutely. Where do you work?
So I work at Barcroft Media, Barcroft TV, mm-hmm. and we produce video content. So it's like mini documentaries.
Oh, Barcroft, yes. I know you guys. We use you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, hey, how we doing?
Yeah, not bad.
It works. Hey. The magic of technology.
Stephen, can't seem to hear you.
Let me unmute you. There you go.
There we go.
Perfect.
We'll give it another 5 minutes or so. This is going to be a very interesting meeting to see if we can pull this off.
Be a learning curve for all of us, I think.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Simon, have you got a copy of the minutes from the last meeting?
I have not. I've not been for such a long time. So my mum's got cancer, so I've been literally out of the loop too. So.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I thought Donica put them on the WhatsApp group.
Let me check.
Yes, you there. Do.
Ah, someone's been organised then. Hang on.
Hello, Eleanor. Can you say something so we can test the mic?
We have them. Perfect.
Wonderful. Eleanor, would you like to say something?
You're muted, Eleanor.
For some reason, I thought it was at 6:30. Oh, it is 6:30.
It is 6:30, Eleanor.
The time is now.
Apologies. I was having dinner.
So was I.
And I apologize if I'm not very good with this. I'm trying it out on my new Mac laptop, and I don't know how well it works.
Oh well, this is very much new territory for all of us. So I think you're not alone. Don't worry.
Okay. Hi everyone.
Laura's on. My internet isn't great, so I'll stay muted until you need me. She just
all
got
right,
something
thanks.
In the chat.
Oh, so. Who was at the last? I'm looking ahead so we can get the meetings from the last minute from the last meeting approved. Who was at the last meeting? I was off.
We got an Eleanor raising her hand there.
Right, okay.
I was. Okay. I would mute myself unless I'm going to talk. Okay.
All right. Don't worry.
It's quite quiet here anyway.
Mm-hmm. How are you, Flavia? All right?
Hello. Hello, everyone. Sorry for being, as always, a couple of minutes late. I take it as a national proud to do so, but I'm fine. Coping well. Excited for today's meeting.
We'll get started at 6:35. Give people another 5 minutes to get on on board.
Perfect.
Okay.
There's a face I've not seen in a little while. Hello, Hussein.
He was there, the experiment one. Trying out.
Let me just close this door.
Yeah, go ahead.
Unmute yourself. Say hello.
Say something so we can hear you.
Hello.
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 Hello, Hussein.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. Not too bad, thanks. Is anyone able to manage to work on something that is not coronavirus related?
Or not in the slightest. Anyone else?
You're the only one. What are you doing? What do you talk about those days?
It's going to be mad when it all goes back to normal. What on earth are we going to do? We're going to be able to travel and go and eat in restaurants and all this kind of mad thing.
I am cooking, though. I'm cooking virtually for friends. It's quite fun.
That's exciting. They can't taste it, but they can look at how wonderful it is, right?
Yeah, I put little videos in it as well, so you can try cooking it if you want to.
That's a good idea.
I'll send you guys.
Please. No, that's awesome. Mm. We like that.
What's that noise?
I'm not sure. I'm just going to be sending an ID to two other members that want to join. One moment.
No problem.
Stephen, where have you come from?
Where have I come from?
Yeah, where do you work? What brings
I'm working at Altazira. I started at Altazira in November, moved over from Australia. So I'm up for membership to diet.
Right. Mm.
What do you do in Altazira?
Assistant program editor.
Sounds great.
Thank you.
Fancy place to work, the Shard.
Very nice, but very weird when it's empty.
Yes, yeah. I would imagine so. Yes, very much so.
You get all those fantastic views. Think of all the photos you can take.
Views of empty streets at the moment.
Yeah, empty London photos. So I've seen a few online. They look absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Very eerie, but also quite beautiful.
I sent a photo of... I didn't take it. Somebody else took it. Of Trafalgar Square and places like that, empty, to a friend in China. Yeah. And he was absolutely amazed. He said, I never imagined a London like that.
I mean, London's a 24-hour city, so seeing empty is just unprecedented. It's just mad.
Yeah. It almost makes me itch to go out and take some photos myself. And then I thought, that would be totally irresponsible.
Exactly.
I think I'm going to take my bike this weekend and, you know, pretending I live central and just go there, you know.
So you need gas mask, you need a helmet, you need goggles, right, gloves.
Fair enough, I can do that.
Be safe.
Seems like a unique occasion, you know, not to be missed. Absolutely. At least once.
Oh, yeah, we have another new arrival. Hello!
Hi!
How are you?
Hello everyone, I'm Helena.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you all as well. I'm sorry, I'm here, sit down in my bed.
No worries, we're all...
so am I, which is why my video is off most. And I'm scoffing homemade biscuits, so...
At least we're all dressed, you know? It could be way worse.
I was tempted to do it in bed as well, but then I couldn't get the balance right. So I on my phone. So I thought, no, that's not a good idea. So I couldn't do it. You have to be so careful in Zoom.
Yeah.
What's in your background, isn't it?
Okay, you look very professional with all the books and everything. No worry.
It's so untidy. If I move a little bit, you can see my wardrobe, which is absolutely him.
Jason, hello.
Who?
Jason. Unmute your microphone.
Ah. Matt, isn't there a thing for you that you can mute people and unmute people?
I don't have that power. I thought Donica gave me that power. Sadly, he doesn't.
Oh.
Is that me now? Can you hear me now?
Yes, Jason, we can hear you now.
There we go, got it.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. A bit stressed. just going out is a bit of a problem these days, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is a little bit.
Yeah. My shirt on.
Right. Well, I don't have the ability to mute people in debates, so we're going to have to play this in terms of good conduct. So if someone's talking, try to give them the opportunity to say what they can without getting in the way or having your phone go off.
But we can still put our hands up, can we?
Oh yeah, you can still put your hands up. So we'll still I'll still see that.
Okay. Right.
Right then, well, we'll start off with approving the minutes of the last meeting. Now, for who was in attendance there, that would be a small number of you. So, Eleanor, Flavia, were you there?
Which month was that? February?
Yeah, end of February, 25th of February.
Maybe, probably. I don't know. I don't remember.
It says you weren't there, so.
I wasn't?
No.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So I wasn't there.
Right.
No, it was only me and Donica.
Right. I think we should push that back to the next meeting then to approve them. Right, I'll get through the branch business as quickly and as efficiently as possible.
Perfect.
First of all, new members that we've got through. The way this will normally work, I'll be reading through the names, and if there's anyone that you think there is an issue with them joining, or you've got a question with them joining, raise your hand and we'll go through it. Normally, this is quite a straightforward process. The only issue is the pronunciation of names. And that covers everyone. So with quite a lot there. Yep, they're all new.
Wow.
So any objections to that list that I've just rattled through?
No.
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 Okay then, I'll propose that we... Sorry?
I'm supposed to be on that list, I think. With the new memberships, I should be.
I did read your name out.
Probably you just read it terribly then.
I read it terribly. Forgive my ignorance.
All right.
You're okay, Helena. It's fine.
Yeah, you're okay, Helena.
I'm okay. I understand my own name. Yay.
So in this vote, you won't be you. You and Raffaella will not be able to vote in this.
And me.
Sorry.
Or me.
Oh no! Or you, Stephen, as well. So
should we be off so that you can object if you need to?
Under the circumstances, I think you'll be fine. Under the circumstances, given the exceptional nature of this meeting, I'm sure when Donica sees this, as he's currently recording it on his PC, we'll have a long conversation about etiquette. But I think, for the sake of union business, and so we can move swiftly to our speakers, I will happily propose that. Who would like to second it?
I shall second that.
Okay then. So everyone happy then with the membership?
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Welcome to the NUJ.
Welcome, guys. Great to have you on
board. What an exceptional time for you to join us. I know. In the middle of a pandemic. You'll never forget it.
I think now more than ever, it's a really important time to join the NUJ, given what's going on within our sectors. It's really important. Now, we'll get to the proposal that we need to... we need to vote on. Essentially, I'll cut to the chase. Under normal circumstances, we would be holding a branch AGM. So we would elect a new committee, a new chair, so we'd be able to take forward the business of the branch into the new year. However, because of the coronavirus outbreak, we're not able to do that. We are now all hostages to Zoom. So the branch proposal is, this branch agrees to postpone the planned AGM due to the situation created by the coronavirus outbreak. The branch agrees that outgoing officers should continue in post until it is safe to hold a physical meeting. The branch further agrees that the annual accounts, which have been prepared by the treasurer, will be made available to any member who wishes to see them. I think it's quite important that we just get that quite clear, that everyone that's in post, myself, Donica, Eleanor, Simon, Flavia, will continue until we're able to hold the AGM in person and then elect the new committee going forward. Any questions or debate that you guys want to have on that? Jason, you good?
All good.
Right. Well, in that case then, I'm happy to propose that. Can I have a seconder?
Thanks, I'll second.
Ooh, two seconders. Oh, giddy thrills. Okay, then, so we'll put that to the vote. If everyone's happy with that, just a quick raise of hands.
Yeah.
Excellent. Right, well, that one will be passed then. Excellent. Donica will be happy. We've got the important bits of paperwork done there. Quick run round of what's going on across newsroom and sectors. Anything that you'd like to bring to the branch's attention or anything we can help with?
I think it's also for the people who join tonight for the first time. Hello.
Hello,
Susie.
Susie.
Hello. Hi, Susie. Hello.
Hi, Susie.
Hello.
Can you hear us?
I'm not muted. Oh, you can hear me. I can't hear
you.
Yeah.
Hello.
Oh.
We can hear you perfectly.
Well, while Susie's working out whether we can hear her or not.
Oh, I can hear you.
There we go. How are you?
Good.
Sorry, I was editing on the same system that I'm Zooming on, so
no problem.
Silly me.
No problem. Are you okay?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. No symptoms. How about you?
I had 7 days in isolation, but that was just because I had issues with my asthma. But so far, COVID-free, touch wood.
Good.
We've just gone through new members, and we've just passed the proposal to keep the committee in place until we're able to hold an AGM in person.
Mm-hmm.
Flavia, you were saying?
Yeah, no, it was just the thing that is useful to remind to everyone, and especially who just joined us tonight, that the NUJ is a fund for members who are struggling financially, especially due to the coronavirus at the moment. So I think it's useful information to remind to everyone that there is solidarity, you know, for colleagues that might need in these difficult times.
Yeah, entirely. It's proving to be a very challenging time across the entirety of the sector, particularly for a great number of freelancers who are finding work drying up or having already dried up, and the sector contracting quite drastically with dramatic changes in how the police are dealing with things. Anything else that people want to bring up? New members, how are things in your workplaces? Is there anything you wanted to bring to our attention or discuss?
All good in my place. We are working from home, actually. We are trying to arrange some shoots from home. So working with people and asking them to film themselves so we could still get their stories out, which I think is quite a nice approach. of doing this.
Stephen, what's it like in Al Jazeera at the moment?
I'm one of the few who has to be in the office.
Great.
It's nice to be working. I'm grateful to have a job. It's very quiet. It's very weird, and probably doing more work than we might normally. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. I'm not complaining about that. They've been good. That, you know, they're putting on taxis to and from work.
Good. Helena?
I'm on furlough, or I don't know
how to
pronounce it. Yay! And with this situation, I don't know if you say it before, but I'm like the content creator of a small fashion brand. And with this situation, they also make redundant a lot of my colleagues. So has been like really a couple of anxious weeks for me. I'm supposed to be on furlough, but still, I don't know. Here we go. I don't know what's going to happen.
Do stay in touch with the union as a member if in terms of support going through this difficult time. As with anyone, it's important that you talk to the union if you need help or advice, or even from the branch. All you've got to do is just reach out, and we'll always be there for you.
Yeah, so far my bosses are like, don't be worried about this. This is for having the help of the government, because obviously they needed to stop everything. Also, I think they have not been particularly clever on how they have been managing the things, but basically everything has been stopped for already 1 week in terms of the warehouse cannot send mm-hmm. anything or whatever. So yeah, I'm glad that I'm in because it's like, yeah, it's nice to know that you have someone covering your back.
Yeah, it's really important right about now. It really is.
Especially
anyone else? Then,
I just want to say, because before joining the union, I was not aware of this, but in the very unlikely case your boss and, you know, somebody wants to have some unpleasant conversation about the future of your work, remember, you're always entitled to have someone of the union, you know, being with you on those conversations. Am I right, Matt?
Yeah,
completely.
So remember this.
It's one of the, like, for me, it was one of the reasons for looking forward to joining with some kind of union as well. I end up finding this because I do freelance jobs sometimes as a photographer, but I joined not thinking about this was going to happen, of course, but just in case something like that happened.
Mm-hmm. Any other updates from across the sectors?
I was just going to say additional help at the moment as well is from the Rory Peck Trust to put out a thing saying they've got funds. Whether you can access that or not, I don't know, but it's worth probably having a look. If you go to the Rory Peck Trust webpage as well, I guess any help coming from anywhere for anyone would be really good. On that. Did you want to raise things about police issues at the moment, or are we doing that next bit? Or do you want me to say something about that now, or...?
Well, I think no, let's bring that up now, because that'll be a nice segue into what we discussed earlier before the meeting.
Okay. We've had one known incident where it was put on the NUJ website as well. There was an arrest going on and a journalist started filming it on their phone and was quite aggressively told by the police to stop filming.
Is the NUJ meeting about the police and the cunt?
Sorry, say again.
Sorry, I was calling my husband through. He's a member as well. He just never goes to meetings. He's a snapper. So
okay.
He's in the office next door. We're so lucky we can both work at home.
Okay. So we've had one incident, and I just in discussion with the NUJ Central yesterday and today, they said they knew of one other incident that's already happened. Now, obviously, these are just isolated incidents at the moment where you know, it could just be the actions of an individual officer gets a bit out of hand due to the, you know, understandably the stress of the situation that everybody's in. But obviously we don't want to see these things escalate worse if members of the press are going out trying to cover what's going on. And we start, if we start to see more of these incidents, I think, you know, something needs to be raised centrally quite quickly as well to knock it on the head and make sure it doesn't happen and there aren't restrictions on the press. I've been at filming a lot in the last 2 weeks. I personally had little to no problem. I had one problem with security guards, but I was on their property, so I haven't really got into that. But it was important what I was filming. You know, police officers going in to deal with a violent situation with absolutely no protective gear whatsoever, which we'd just been discussing before they went running into the incident. So, you know, I thought it was worthwhile to document that, and the security took a dislike to me being there and filming this incident. But obviously, the two incidents that we've seen, or the one that we've seen and the one that I've been told about as well, apparently middle of last week, there was an incident where a member of the press was blocked by the police one way or another and restricted from doing their job whilst covering this situation. So it's just kind of, you know, raising the alarm a little bit, going, let's be aware that these things have already happened. They're only isolated incidents at the moment, but if we do see more and more of them, we need to do something about it at the union.
Absolutely, absolutely.
In this case, showing to the police a press card should be, can anyone confirm that with a press card of the NUJ, you should be entitled to be out doing your job? Is that what is required?
That's the official line. What happened on Saturday was that the member of the press did identify themselves as press with a press card, and the police officer said, I don't care who you are, stop filming.
Okay.
Unless anyone else has any other updates or things that they wanted to bring to the attention of the branch, I'd like to again, Jason, to invite Jason to talk about something which we'll be discussing at the next meeting in more detail.
Is this about the film or the case?
This is about the film.
About the film. Okay. Some of you might not be aware. If you know about the legal case about six NUJ journalists, myself included, and Jess Hurd, who's also on here, we all discovered that we were on the domestic extremist counter-terrorism database. And we have a case that's been rolling on for 4 years now, 5 years this year, we're trying to have the data removed and have it set down in law that it was unlawful of them to document journalists in this manner and put us on a database. Part of that, what we're doing with that is for the last two going on 3 years now, we've been working on a film, and we did two short films years and years ago when we started to suspect the police had journalists under surveillance, and in 2008 we did one short film called Press Freedom Collateral Damage. The second film we did was Press Freedom Hostile Reconnaissance, because that's what a photographer was called when she was out working. And that was in 2010. And the third film, which is actually a feature-length film that we're doing now, which covers the whole situation from the start of when we started to suspect something was going on to finding out we knew something was going on to years later when we, in when would it be, 2015, 2014, 2015, the journalists found out they were on the database and had been under quite extensive surveillance by the police. So we're now halfway through getting this film done, and as we fingers crossed, we're starting to get the case back online, although it's now everything's messed up because of the COVID virus. What we're doing is trying to get towards seeing this film finished by the end of the year, if possible, if we can get through all of this current mess. But what the proposal is to do is to come back in, and we was in my original email, I think was in end of February to Matt and Donica to suggest the idea of, like, you know, what would come in about maybe April or May and show kind of a sneak preview of the film of what we got done so far, which is going to be at least half an hour, maybe 40 minutes of film, which is interviews with the people involved and kind of a documented history of what was going on in the time, certainly during the times of the war on terror, when this got really bad for journalists who were out covering, particularly covering a lot of protests. But obviously the surveillance wasn't just whilst we were out working, there was other things going on as well. And, you know, that all kind of gets uncovered by the film. So that's kind of where we are. Plan is to have the film done by the end of the year. I did say by the end of 2020, but then all this happened. So I'm not too sure if we're being too optimistic, depending on how long everything goes on, really. So yeah, that's where we are, really. And we're still waiting for the next step of the case, which is, I guess, the last that I heard from the lawyers or from the union was we're currently looking at, they're finalising the funding of how we're going to go in and challenge this against the police, because the police are absolutely silent, have been for nearly 4 years now. And so we're working on the funding for the next step in order to go down the road of judicial review, take them into the High Court and prove that documenting journalists and putting them on a counter-terrorism database is unlawful.
I think that's something I'd be really keen to talk about, to dedicate an actual meeting to talk about this in more detail, to be honest. And that's something which we'll put on the agenda for next month. One thing that did slip my mind, which is of paramount importance before we move on to our guests from PressPad, and it's on me for forgetting to discuss this. Donica has put a proposal to the branch as a proposer to have the branch donate £1,000 to NUJ Extra. NUJ Extra is the charitable wing of the NUJ, with everything that's going on with the coronavirus outbreak, the NUJ Extra has come to branches looking for support, where more of our members are looking for help from the union. It's quite straightforward, really. I think, given the good work that the NUJ does, but also the good work that NUJ Extra does for members that are in hardship and in times of need, I think we can afford a grand to be put into the pot to help out colleagues elsewhere. And I would be more than happy and proud, even, that the branch makes a contribution to that effort. So Donica would like to propose it. I'll be seconding it. Does anyone have any questions to that, or is everyone happy?
I'm really happy.
Yeah. It's a no-brainer, this one.
That's great.
Again, but as you said, it's something that needs to be done with pride, right?
Yes, yeah. And I didn't want to close the meeting and move on before we got that voted on. So if everyone's happy with that, quick show of hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Excellent, then. Well, with that, then, unless there's any other business...
No, thanks for having me. I'll leave, but not with any, you know, I'd love to hear the speaker, but I'm in an edit, so.
No, Susie, I'll send you an email about things later on this evening.
Oh, thank you. All right.
I'm afraid I need to head off as well.
See everyone.
Yeah, but yeah, no problem.
Thank you.
So then, let's move on to our speakers from PressPad.
Hi there.
Hi. Hello. Olivia, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Can you guys see me?
I can see you.
Yeah, we can see you.
Well, thank you for inviting us. I think I've got my two colleagues, Laura and Nicola, as well on the call.
Hi, everybody. I'm Laura Garcia here from my living room. Nice to see you all.
How are you doing?
Hello, Laura.
And Nicola?
Sorry, I forgot it was on mute. I'm Nicola Slawson. Nice to meet you all. Hope you're all okay.
Yeah, we're all doing fine. Thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate. We are recording this meeting, because we thought, you know, it's a bit of an exceptional circumstances, and we're super sorry that we're doing this on Zoom and trying to do this meeting as well, but we want to record this so that we can share it also on, you know, from tomorrow, so that everyone can, you know, have access to this.
Problem. Would you like us to start off by explaining a bit about what PressPad does, and then maybe we can ask questions? Is that the best?
Yes, I was going to say, if you guys could just introduce yourselves in terms of what you guys are doing with PressPad, give us an idea about really what PressPad is.
Sure. Why don't you kick off, Olivia, and then we can, Nicola, can piggyback afterwards.
I'll start, and then I'll maybe let Laura talk a little bit about the particulars of hosting, which she's been primarily leading on, and then have Nicola talk a little bit about our comms and our recent fundraising efforts. So PressPad is a social enterprise that we founded now 2 years ago. I'm a BBC staff journalist, and I don't know how exactly I came up with the idea, but I did. Laura got in touch with me, and since then we've kind of been going from strength to strength with a lot of demand. And what we do is try and help those who are getting into journalism afford to do unpaid or poorly paid work experience or internships. And in particular, we're focusing on trying to improve the socioeconomic and geographical diversity within the media, because there's a lot of elitism, nepotism in our profession. And I think we've seen with big stories, you know, like the election, recent elections, Brexit, of course, and no doubt with coronavirus, you know, we will see that too, that disproportionately we are missing a lot of voices of the kind of most vulnerable people in our society, because our media is made up of people perhaps who can afford the opportunities, you know, to work in an institution and in an industry that doesn't particularly pay very well and isn't particularly secure. And I think, you know, anecdotally, we've seen, you know, that getting worse and worse. You know, talking to some of our sponsors on Fleet Street, there used to be lots of people from working class backgrounds, from the north, you know, from Scotland, who would be down in London. But because of the decimation of local journalism, which was a, you know, a really fertile kind of jumping off point for a lot of new journalists, because of the housing crisis and because of now, you know, this sort of requirement to have masters and then internships, it's a very expensive profession to get into. So what we're trying to do is help young people. And the way we do that is through a mentorship and hosting service. So it's kind of a bit like Airbnb. We match these young people with established journalists who have a spare room for mentorship and hosting. So at the moment, we're setting up a marketplace website so that we can enable that to happen at scale, which is something we believe is really important. There's all sorts of fantastic initiatives to help fund training, you know, and the diversity fund, etc. But what we really believe, to make a kind of sizable dent and more of an impact, we need to be able to offer that to a lot of different people. So that's in a nutshell kind of what we do. And I'll pass over to Laura perhaps to talk a little bit about our approach really to the mentorship and what we found to date in terms of the people that we've helped.
Yeah, so I handle the operations part of PressPad, and it is my pride and joy to read kids' applications and try and match them up with hosts. And up until now, we've matched, it was going to be 54, but then everyone's internships got cancelled because of coronavirus, so we've matched 46 young people with their host mentors. And I got involved with PressPad after Olivia had founded it. I used to teach journalism at a university, and I got really tired of seeing some of my best friends just not even apply for the big internships that I knew they could get, because they just knew they weren't going to be able to afford it, either they're commuting in and out of London or getting a hotel. So when I came across PressPad on Twitter, I didn't know Olivia at all, and just like randomly emailed her as this crazy person who was like, let me help. You don't know me, but I believe in what you're doing. And ever since, like Olivia said, we've just kind of been growing and growing and growing. And now PressPad is essentially just the three of us, and we need more help, which is why we're trying to grow. And the way the process works is that, pardon if you see my cat jump into the shot, it just had to happen at some point. The way it works is that these young people who are incredibly entrepreneurial and really driven go and find themselves an internship. We don't play a part in that. Once they've got it, they come to us and they fill out an application telling us why they need our help, what kind of issues they're interested in, a little bit so we can get to know them. And then I go and look in our database of almost 100 hosts to see who I can match them with. Whether it's because of the geography of it. So for example, if someone's got an internship at Sky News, Austerlee is a very specific, weird place to get to, so that people have to live on that side of London, or whether it's by interest. so we can match them up more by what the kind of stuff that they're interested in. And then the last step is obviously asking the hosts for their availability and how that works for them. And the idea is that the mentorship part is incredibly important. It's not just about having somewhere safe and affordable to stay, but it's about having someone to come and talk to at the end of the day who understands what it's like to get called at a news conference and panicking to get your idea through, or when your editor doesn't like your headline, how do you pick yourself up after that, or how do you pitch a story? And that support network is there for people who come from families who have an industry background but not there for other people, and we're trying to recreate that support network through the mentorship. And that's pretty much it. After that, we kind of step back and each intern and mentor kind of can take that relationship however they want. So some people get really involved. Other people end up like being friends after their mentorship internship. Everyone that we host is over 18, which is really important. And we also have really strong safeguarding processes, because that is something that we've been worried about from day one. So if you're listening to any of this and thinking, oh my God, this sounds great, I totally could help, or I know a friend with a spare room, I'll drop the link into the chat in a second. We need more and more people. There's always kids who need help. And I know right now no one's going anywhere, but at some point we all will be going anywhere, and we can't do what we do without people like you guys who help us help these kids.
And then if I can just ask Nicola to kind of chime in with, you're on mute again, Nicola, just so that you know. to talk about, I guess a lot of people came across us when we did our crowdfunder at the end of last year. We had a kind of soft launch event in News UK at the beginning of the year, and Nicola really helped us drive all of that, and then she's leading our comms. And Nicola can perhaps, with Lauren, my sort of interjections, talk a bit about the new model, because to date, nobody has paid for any of the hosting. It was essentially a pilot. We didn't know if it was going to work. Then it grew rapidly. And now we're trying to work out a way to be sustainable, but also to be ethical. And it's very important that the industry picks up the tab for this, not a charity, not individuals. And so it's important that there's a cost to these organizations to encourage them to improve their diversity by paying for their interns' accommodation. But I'll let Nicola let you know a little bit more about what we've got planned as well under the coronavirus situation.
Hi, thanks very much for having me. So I joined PressPad last September because I was just going freelance, and I decided I was going to try and set up a group for journalists and working class backgrounds. And I put something on Twitter, and somebody suggested I get in touch with Olivia for a chat. And so we had a phone conversation, and she mentioned that she was doing a crowdfunder, and I previously did the strategy for the Positive News crowdfunder a few years ago. Actually, it was 5 years ago, not a few. And she said, oh great, well, you know, we're looking for someone to join part-time. And at the time, I've been thinking about going freelance, and obviously it's better when you can have a bit of a regular gig. So I joined in September, but we didn't do the crowdfunder until December, because we were lucky to be accepted into this program called NatWest Back Her Business Side Hustle. It's a very long-winded name, but it just meant that we had the chance to win some extra money, basically, and then they also offered a bit of support and coaching for our crowdfunder. And so I was campaigns manager, and so we did the crowdfunder, which maybe you saw because it exploded all over the internet. Well, definitely on Twitter at least. And it was to raise money for a coordinator. We haven't hired the coordinator yet. Obviously with coronavirus, we've put sort of everything, a lot of things on pause, because we can't match people at the moment. And the whole idea of the coordinator is to make sure, because we want to grow PressPad and help many more people, it's obviously difficult for Laura and Olivia, who both have full-time jobs, to be able to manage that. And also we want to make sure we've got like a 24-hour helpline in case something goes wrong and things like that. So we need a dedicated person. And then we raised a little bit over, so we were aiming for 30, we got 35, and the extra was for to go towards the roadshow, which again we were planning for September. Hopefully, we're not sure to see what's going to happen, but you know,
the roadshow, just to be a bit more explicit about that, is something that some of our that the Financial Times has sponsored, and that's for us to go around non-Russell Group universities to give some workshops, you know, things about how to get into the industry. Laura's going to give a workshop on misinformation and first draft. We're going to take the Media Voices podcast there. We also want to have our D&I consultant, who we brought in recently, talk to young people in particular about kind of identity politics and sort of what they do if something comes up at work, you know, be it somebody saying something derogatory about their accent or, you know, where they come from, etc. So it's more than just us pushing press pad. It's really, you know, that'll be kind of 30 minutes we wanted to kind of add value and get out of London, because a lot of the time these big organizations, you know, they'll have events but they're only in London, and they're also not being aimed at the people perhaps that, you know, we're most lacking in our industry. So that's the roadshow, which, you know, Nicola will be heavily involved in, but of course is on pause while universities and the rest of the world is on pause. Sorry. Do carry on, Nicola.
And then we, after, so we got 35,000 ended, and then a few days later we found out we won the top prize, which was £10,000. So that was amazing. And then in January, the end of January, like Olivia said, we had our soft launch at the News UK building, and we were joined by two top journalists for a Q&A, and it was just a really great night.
And now with coronavirus, what are our plans?
Yes. So now I've taken on the role of communications, so it's a bit of a different role. Obviously, with coronavirus, we want to make sure we support lots of young people who had work experience lined up or internships, and that they've now been cancelled. And they're feeling really anxious, especially if it was part of their course requirements, or, you know, obviously people get jobs when they're at internships, that you know, often leads to a job or at least shifts. And even for freelancers, it's obviously, it can be something that young people do after they've done some work experience, they might start freelancing for the organisation. So there's a lot of anxious young people. And so we're doing quite a few things to support them, including webinars, which are going to be sort of masterclasses. We're going to do Q&As with loads of people. So if any of you want to volunteer your time to help some young people, you'd be very welcome. And we also are upping our blogs. So we're going to have really useful blogs, regular blogs. So that's at the moment, but we do have some other plans, because obviously we sort of know this is, you know, the long game. It's not going to be over in 2 weeks, unfortunately.
The other things that we'd like to put in place, but obviously will take a bit more time, is things like Zoom, or, you know, are very good for huge meetings, and you can have kind of different tables and stuff. So we want to do some kind of remote speed networking. We're looking at setting up a kind of remote mentoring network as well, which was something we wanted to do before anyway, because not everybody does have a spare room, and that shouldn't exclude them from, you know, being able to help the next generation of journalists. In particular, we want to also start looking at getting a team together, most likely of Nicola, a woman called Jude at Sound Delivery, who works with people in the community to kind of get their lived experience into the media, and then a colleague of mine at the BBC, who was Carrie Gracie's producer, who's just come back from some time at, on the Knight Wallace scholarship, where she's been looking in particular at how to get lived experience into articles. We want to bring this team together to help young people pitch stories about how they're experiencing the coronavirus crisis, because ultimately we're all under lockdown, right? Almost like a third of the world. And so, you know, in a way that's a golden opportunity for some young people who will have a different perspective, who may be, you know, in a kind of intergenerational setting, who may be, perhaps, in a care environment, where whatever it may be, they will all have their own experiences of what they're going through, and we really want to help them leverage that. So if they can't get a work experience at this time because of the shutdown, they could get a byline or two. And so we'll help them pitch, connect them to editors, and help them with any of that process. You know, when you write your first article, you're terrified. And often it needs quite a lot of editing, you know, perhaps before you're even wanting a bigwig editor to see it. So that's something else we're looking at setting up. But we'll take a bit of time, especially as we're only three people, and we're also, I'm going into the BBC as well, and Laura's working on misinformation at First Draft, and Nicola is also continuing with her Guardian freelance shifts. So that's roughly, I think, the three of us and kind of a whistle stop on our journey, really. One thing maybe that's worth mentioning that you might all have seen and been curious about is the sort of business model of PressPad, and I've sort of alluded to it before. You know, we did start off being entirely free. We do plan when the new website is launched, so that hasn't happened yet. We've tried to kind of bring in via our comms sort of some information about that, but that's been patchy, again, because we're so small. But in a way, for us, this lockdown has sort of been a bit of a hidden blessing, because it means we can take a bit more time and a bit more stock and make sure that our marketplace website, when it launches, is really, excuse my French, shit hot, so that we can, you know, make sure that the service we're providing, which is really, really personal, and, you know, you heard from Laura before, you know, so much care and consideration is put into that, so that we don't lose that when we scale up. And, you know, we've been lucky enough to get a grant from Nesta, the Future of News Fund, which a lot of that money came from DCMS, and Google, things like that, I think. But that has given us some money to really focus on structuring our bursary fund, so that we make sure that we're in particular looking at the socioeconomic elements, but also trying to kind of bear in mind intersectionality of diversity, and to make sure as well that we are recording our impact in the most meaningful ways, not only so that we can then say to our sponsors, some of whom we haven't been able to kind of lock down, ironically, excuse the pun, because of the lockdown, because obviously there's so many more important things right now, but it's really important that we show, when there is such little money in the media and in the diversity space, that the money that is coming to us is well spent, because I think some people were confused around what our sort of payment model was, and just to clarify, it's £20 a night, basically. The first 2 weeks are free, and if you qualify for our bursary, of which we're designing at the moment the exact criteria, and that'll all, that kind of logic to that, what we're calling a kind of bursary calculator, will all be made completely transparent and accessible on our website. Then if you qualify for that, you'll get the entirety of your placement for free. So, you know, essentially the costings really are just to help us to exist, because, you know, in moments like this, you know, when suddenly things happen, agendas change, you know, being reliant on grant funding, it's a kind of hamster wheel of applications, which we just do not have the kind of manpower, and we don't want to create the overheads, you know, to sort of sustain. And so if we can take money directly from, say, freelancers who are moving around and want to stay with another journalist and can pay, or, you know, journalists in their first job and perhaps they want, you know, to stay with someone for a month while they flat hunt, things like that, I think are really valid ways. And, you know, the price of the accommodation, you know, even if you were not to count, you know, the fact that there are bursaries available and the first 2 weeks are free, you know, £20, really difficult to find something, you know, in sort of zones, you know, 1, 2, and 3 with somebody who is of your industry, who is safe, vetted, who has had DBS checks that we have paid for, who has had you know, their home checked remotely and in person by us, so remotely over Skype, and then we follow up when we can to do extra sort of checks in person. So there's a lot of what goes into what we do to make it a really high quality, safe service, and that costs. And I know journalists are not the best people, you know, in terms of having heads for numbers. There are a few that are good at that, but I think it's really important that we are transparent about the fact that creating something like this from scratch, which has never been done before, as we're doing, does take money and investment. And, you know, certainly myself and Laura have put 2 years of our lives into this, you know, pretty much every waking moment outside of our jobs, you know, to get to the point that we're at now where people can see something that is worth investing in. So we take it incredibly, incredibly seriously, and we open ourselves up to your kind of questions and scrutiny, really.
And I should say that actually most of the people who've applied to us so far have only applied to us for 1 or 2 week placements, which will always be free. And that's obviously because if you live in Hull and you've got 2 weeks at the Times, that's when you're, and you don't know anyone in London, that's when you're going to find it quite difficult to find a sublet for just 2 weeks, for example. So the only options really are hotel or Airbnb, which are much more expensive. So the first 2 weeks are always free, and actually most of the people have only applied for that much. And also we're getting the organisations, news organisations, to buy credit. So we've got quite a few partners now, and some of them do pay their interns. So obviously they're going to have some money, but then they decided to also buy credit for their interns towards the cost of hosting. And I think that some people who've never lived not in London, that wasn't a very good sentence, but it's I think some people, you know, would be fine going into a sublet, for example, if they had the money and they're being paid. But they, you know, they're often quite far out of town. They can be really poor quality accommodation, for example. And whereas the hosts obviously have nice homes, they're like quite central, and they're safe, and we've like checked them and vetted them. So if they are being paid for their internships, and you know, at HuffPost, I think they're paid like nearly 25 grand. So there are interns who are being paid, and then also it helps prop up everything else, so we can be more sustainable. I actually did an unpaid internship, and I lived and worked in a boarding school, and it was not ideal because I was sometimes working literally 24 hours a day. So I wouldn't have been able to afford the fee, and so I would have applied for the bursary, and I'm confident that I would have got it. And that's, I'm really, really passionate about PressPad, and I really want it to be sustainable. And to be sustainable, it has to have a sustainable business model. So but obviously we're not for profit, and you know, we're trying to, we also do raise a lot of money elsewhere as well. So there are these, yeah, like the Future News Fund. So so yeah. That's
Can I just add something there really quickly? So from the feedback that I get from our interns as well, even if sometimes their media employer is offering to cover their accommodation or put them up in a hotel or even give them a per diem to buy a bit of food, for some of them, the cost of not having a job, even if all of those other costs are covered, is too high and they can't take it on board. So one of the main reasons why we decided to shift to this sustainable business model as well was to encourage the industry to recognize that if you have someone on staff for more than 2 weeks, they're really your junior reporter or your junior journalist, and their work is worth recognizing. And people end up doing entire workloads and having bylines and not having that compensated. And it just means that a very specific type of person gets into journalism. Not that they're not good at their job, but it means that that opportunity wasn't kind of open for everybody else. And in terms of demographics, our interns tend to be more women than men. And I think that has a lot to do with the safety element of it. So young men feel that they can crash someone's couch or go and stay in a hostel a lot more than some of the young women that get in touch with us. A lot of our interns are LGBTQ or BAME for the exact same reasons of having kind of like that safety element and the mentorship element, and coming from outside of London, knowing where you're going to stay is a big thing that people need, and that they wouldn't have done otherwise. A lot of our interns tell us exactly that. But we'd love to hear how this plays out in your newsrooms and or your own personal experiences, and anything that we could do to help.
Well, thanks for that. Let's throw it out to some questions. Any questions then, Flavia? I know we've been talking.
Yeah. I was curious if you can give a little bit more of detail of the criteria you're working on for the bursaries.
Yeah, so I'm working with a guy called Frank Starling, who's a D&I consultant, and we just started this month with the bursary calculator, and we're looking at the bursary basically being sort of weighted around really only issues that are pertinent to socioeconomic diversity. So things like the profession of your parents when you were a certain age, free school meals, things that, the NHS, the Cabinet Office all use for their kind of socioeconomic equal opportunities kind of criteria. So I kind of, whether I've got it in front of me that I can just read it out to you, the categories. This is a work in progress, so we haven't finished it yet. Here, I've got it right here. And then, of course, we also wanted to add some other elements that were specific to our industry. So here I've got the first question is about the secondary school attended, the type of secondary school, then your parental qualification, parental occupation, how many people, so this was a question really to kind of address nepotism. So how many people did you know before the age of 16, the work in the industry you're pursuing as a career? So in the press pad, this is related to the media, but we've already had interest from kind of social enterprise groups about kind of replicating press pad in other industries. So we're trying to think with that in mind. If your parents or your family, you have family friends that are journalists, you're more likely to, get in. What type of university did you attend? And that's partly because we see a big difference in the media of these sort of kind of elite, graduate types, people like myself, to be quite honest, Oxbridge, Russell Group grads, and that's not representative of our audience or our society. And so, that disproportionate kind of nature of elitely educated individuals is not good enough. Finally, some questions about free school meals and how you would describe yourself in terms of your kind of socioeconomic background. So we're also looking potentially at some questions around accent and also about how supportive your parents are. But we're very mindful that also these are, very young people often who, we need to be sensitive of the kind of questions we're asking them, and also make sure that we ask some questions that are likely to be answered. So those questions were chosen, most of them by Frank, because those are the questions that research has shown people to be most comfortable answering. If people just write, I don't know, or I would prefer not to say, then we don't really get anywhere. So that's the basis of the bursary calculator at the moment, but we're still tweaking. We had a data meeting the other day with our web development team and our diversity data analyst, Nancy Roberts from Umbrella Analytics. And we're thinking very carefully about how we put this together, because it's really important that we don't replicate any kind of structures or hierarchies of power or privilege in a parallel way through what PressPad is doing. The bursary calculator is one thing. The other thing that's important that we, again, haven't confirmed yet is how we allocate that bursary. So it's all well and good to have, good criteria, but then are we choosing to allocate a set number of bursaries? Are we choosing to allocate bursaries to everybody who scores above a certain amount through this bursary calculator? Is that all going to stay fixed? That very much also depends on how much money we have to put through to the bursary. PressPad as a kind of mission lock in our kind of the DNA of our company, and it's written into our governing documents. We put 10% of all the money we make, so that's turnover, not profit, into the bursary fund. So that's kind of our commitment. So we really probably will be operating at a loss, because once we've paid to DBS check, both intern and host, so that's 35 quid. That's 70 quid already. And we're also offering all of these freebies. It's not, if this was our business model to make money, we'd be absolute morons. So But those questions, a detail of which still need to be worked out, but they're slightly moving targets at the moment until we finish some of our financial modelling and we know, you know, exactly how realistic it is in terms of how much money we can make ourselves, how much we'll have to raise from grants, and then also, you know, how many bursaries we feel we need to be giving out to make a difference. So all of those things are, you know, quite unknown entities at the moment, but we're making good progress, which is why I said earlier that it's in a way great to sort of be given a little bit more time to make sure we really get this right before we launch and not to rush into that.
Eleanor, you had a question.
Yeah, because I think diversity was mentioned, intersectionality was mentioned, and I'm sure you know that I'm going to mention the disability bit. I'm not sure you can see, but I am in a wheelchair. One of the things that I work with a lot of young, disabled women, LGBT and otherwise, and they have problems. It's not just in the media, and a lot of them are interested in the media, for example, BBC, all that sort of stuff, but they cannot afford to come to London even more than other people.
Yes.
Because very often they need accessible accommodation and a care package and all that, without boring everybody. I'm just wondering, how have you considered working with disabled people?
Yes.
And not just people in wheelchairs. I mean, there's lots of different types of impairments that can be, you know, people work with. And I say that because I keep being asked, you know, where the voices of minority people and intersectionally, and I get inundated. Today, I was sent three emails about asking me for voices for disabled women, you know, and I'm only one person. So I think where I'm coming from is, I know it's much, much more difficult, and because disabled people are much more marginalized. Mm-hmm. How have you worked into your feasibility, your business plan, etc., for disability?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Is it okay if I take that one as well, just because we've had some situations in terms in the past who in fact in the end didn't end up going ahead with a press pad hosting, but we were able to sort out accommodation for them. So there was a lovely girl from Ireland, I think she was at Trinity College Dublin, and she got a internship with the FT, and she was in a wheelchair, and we were able to find a wheelchair accessible accommodation for her. We are very aware, you know, in particular of the kind of socioeconomic knock-on impacts of, you know, having a disability, and, you know, the extra considerations and costs that might go with that, but also, you know, the extra considerations around mentoring. So, you know, we've had people who are on the neurodiversity spectrum. We've had their parents get in touch and say, is it possible to, you know, have a mentor that is considerate of this? So it's very much something that we're thinking about. We have to be honest that, you know, we are first and foremost focusing on socioeconomic diversity and the model using that kind of host mentorship to combat that, but we understand that if you just look at that in a vacuum, it's never going to work. So we very much want to make sure that, and again, this is where these sorts of things may get added to the bursary calculator. You know, if you, and we use this example all the time with geography, you know, if you're coming, say, from, I don't know, your lower middle class, but you're based up in the north of England, it's going to cost you a lot more probably, and, you know, it's going to be much more risky for you perhaps to come to London to do an internship. Similarly, if you have caring responsibilities or you have some kind of disability, whether that's, you know, like, you know, visible or invisible, that there can be some hidden costs, you know, that mean that your life, you know, is a lot more kind of costly to organize and to, you know, arrange around. And so that is something that definitely we think is important for us to consider and for that to be present. what Frank, who is working with us, is doing. He's not just looking at things like the bursary calculator, but he's also going to be, we're just writing the content for our new website at the moment, which is taking a long time, but he will also be making sure, in collaboration with all of us, but he will be laser focused on this, that all of our business plans, our comms, everything is accessible, and that, as you, as you know, you said before, that this kind of intersectionality is represented. To that end, we also have quite a few ambassadors who have disabilities. Ellis Palmer at the BBC is probably our most active one. He's fantastically supportive and is a real kind of role model for people who, you know, maybe from that background, and, you know, perhaps have questions that are very specific, you know, to their particular situation that other people would not be able to answer. So, you know, we lean on him and his expertise and generosity, really, to try and connect him with people. But we can always be doing more. So if you have any suggestions or anything specific that you'd like us to look at, now is a great time for us to go away and to make that happen. So
great to have a conversation afterwards. Also, we've just hired our new newsletter editor has a disability. So we're trying to make sure we're accommodating and supportive of her, so that we're in our work as a team as well, we're really inclusive. So, but yeah, it'd be great to talk to you afterwards, maybe, if you were up
for that. Yeah, we're happy to help. I just want to say that the intersectionality includes among disabled people that you said he's a man, I assume he's white, you know, and there are those differences that work in this kind of, but then I'll leave it and I'll leave
no we understand it becomes very complex, and that's why I always, when I talk about issues of diversity and inclusivity, I stress that our primary focus is socioeconomic, because otherwise, you know, we get into a situation where we're trying to promise too many things to too many people, and, you know, there are probably other organizations that are better set up, perhaps. I don't know. If there are, we'd love to partner with them, and that's one of the things that we're trying to do, you know, in association, for example, with, I don't know if you know, the new Lenny Henry Center for Diversity in the Media. We're looking at trying to create a really strong ecosystem of different groups, because we cannot truthfully and, you know, effectively do what we're doing to a level of excellence in all areas, and it just wouldn't be appropriate for us to. So when it comes, say, for example, to issues of the ethnicity, we, you know, definitely, you know, take that into consideration, and, you know, but we struggle ourselves when it comes to signing up hosts that are people of color, because unfortunately a lot of the senior journalists in our profession are white people, because of the systemic, you know, prejudices.
Or the rooms, at least.
Yeah, or the ones with spare rooms. So
we still have found that we've got a higher level. Someone remind me. I think it's 22%, and the industry.
In terms of interns,
the hosts we have probably like.
That's the interns. Yeah, can you remember the stat?
Yeah, so I think the industry average of sort of representation of and again I know different people prefer different ways of referring to BAME, but ethnic minority journalists is about sort of 3-5%. That's inclusive of, you know, Black, Asian, Latino, Latinx, etc. Whereas our interns in our pilot to date, I think it's been about 24% have come from BAME backgrounds. So, you know, we are finding that we're appealing to people, you know, from lots of, you know, different kind of diverse communities, not just socioeconomic. But again, we always caveat that, because we don't want to be promising to fix everything. But we are very aware that you can't be putting people in boxes, because that's not how life works. You have to be open and aware of all of those things. And that's why we have so many partnerships, because if we can't help somebody, we want to be able to pass them on to somebody who can. And that's not a failing of us as PressPad. We do what we do and we do it well. If there is somebody else that is doing, you know, what they do in a fantastic sense, then we're not going to mess around with them any longer. We're going to pass them over to somebody who is best equipped to do that. But yeah, we definitely would love to listen more to how we can.
I'm going to just make a point and I'll go. I mean, shut up about this.
No, it's
no, but the coronavirus thing is actually partly quite useful, if I can say that, for disabled people, because quite a few of them say, you know, I don't know what other non-disabled people are going on about. This is what we experience. Yeah. You talked about live experience all our, you know, all the time of not being able to go out, having to make decisions about who we see, etc. Now, just suggestion is maybe, you know, you were talking about placing people, of making use of this this social isolation kind of period into being creative about how you do the internships. Yes. I mean, this could be, because a lot of things that happened before, people would say, oh, you can't do this from home. Why not? Mm-hmm. Everybody's doing it from home now. And yeah. You know, etc. You know, I am supposed to be at a conference, you know, in Los Angeles at the moment. It didn't happen, but you can go and do it online now. And it used to be that, oh, if you don't come, that's it. You can't attend. Yeah. So I'm just sort of saying that, you know, maybe you can think about how you can work with people so that, you know, the internship or whatever does not necessarily mean having to be physically there.
Yeah, and I think we had thought about that in terms of kind of geographical access, but you're right, it totally relates to kind of physical access from a kind of disability point of view. And to that end, again, I don't know whether it'll be going ahead, but Google was to host our first conference that we were running in October, on October 16th, which was going to be the first diversity in the media conference. So looking at diversity in all of its facets, not just socioeconomic, not just equal pay, not just, you know, disability or ethnicity, everything. And we were going to live stream that so that anybody could participate. And I think that's definitely something that we can look at even more, you know, not just about live streaming, but how can we incorporate people's questions? How can we get smaller, you know, meeting groups, you know, have people on Zoom, etc. So I think your points are fantastic and we've noted them and we'll go away.
And make quickly, it's just like, I'm telling people we've missed a trick, because I've seen people who doing, you know, teaching online and stuff like that about how to survive social isolation. I said, we're experts at it. We should be doing webinars and things like that. Why weren't we? So, okay.
Can we commission a webinar from you?
I was just going to give you a little bit of hope, Eleanor, that the industry is starting to think like that in creative ways. And we'd love to, like Olivia said, work with you to partner up. I spoke to a lady from Fremantle Media. They're a TV production company, so more on the like factual entertainment TV, not straight up news, but they had summer internships lined up where they bring 4 kids to London for a month, and they're obviously not bringing them to London anymore, but they're thinking of ways to do the internship remotely, to give them tasks. Well,
if it's not a flag or whatever, but I am on the APPG. I think it says all party political group.
Oh yes.
Parliament on creative media as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I can give you links for that if any of you are interested in being part of that.
We would love to follow up with that. If we can get your email at the end of this,
that'll be great. I've got it.
Brilliant.
Flavia, have you had your hand up for like ages?
I think you're smoking.
Smoking.
It's just super cool and louche.
Trying to speak.
Oh, I love to.
Just being devastatingly glamorous as a European.
Exactly. No, but I think it's super important what you guys are discussing. So I didn't want to interrupt, and I work in TV production and doing documentaries and generally video stuff. And definitely the industry is moving in that way. There's going to be a tremendous lack of content in the coming months because everything has been stopped. And editors are more and more asking for a creative way to realize documentaries, realize the reportage, but also factual and entertainment content. So
you see, Flavia, that the BBC has put out a call for 4 script ideas that people in their own homes.
Yes, I saw it. I saw it. Unfortunately, I work on real stuff. I'm not really a good script writer.
Yeah,
my imagination is very low. But I saw that. It's fantastic. It's fantastic, and all over the workplace, this is happening. So definitely, it's an industry that is shifting. And if you guys work with people who are recently joining the industry, I think it's an amazing opportunity for having new voices that probably are more creative in that way that we old people are.
Do we have any more questions for our friends from PressPad?
I do have one actually, but I don't know if anyone want to make a question.
I've got a couple. Seem rude not to. How did you guys deal with the learnings from the pushback that you experienced on Twitter?
Yeah, so I think for us it was tough. I think partly because, you know, from November, you know, we didn't have kind of 2 pennies to rub together, and then suddenly, you know, we had a lot of quite positive news and interest and publicity. And I don't think we were expecting people to really kind of be looking at what we were doing in such depth. You know, I think it was really important for us as a team to realize that, you know, what was, you know, I think some very valid concerns, in particular about our kind of comms with our outdated FAQs, you know, it showed us that we had to do better on that front, but it also, you know, made us kind of, I think, be a bit more realistic about the fact that at the end of the day, you know, that you will always have kind of detractors and people who perhaps disagree with what you're doing, some of whom actually, you know, will criticize without having read all the materials, and so we'll bring up things that actually just don't end up being true. And it's, you know, I think for at least for me, you know, I can't speak on behalf of the other guys, but it was really important for our team to, you know, realize that actually what we're doing has already helped so many people, has a lot of support from the industry in terms of sponsors, you know, those who have gone through it and funders, and that actually, you know, sometimes things just take time to work out. You know, when you're working in a startup, things are incredibly agile. You know, if someone had told me that from, you know, the first day that I, you know, started PressPad's website, that we would be here now, I don't think I could have, you know, only in 2 short years, there's no way I would have, you know, anticipated that. So I think, you know, we are very confident on the path we're taking. We have all sorts of expertise, be that, you know, legal, diversity and inclusion consultants, you know, web experience people. There are a lot of people that really want this to succeed. And, you know, we did take away, I think, the most important thing in terms of operationally and in terms of the kind of system that we've got. There was a good point made about access in terms of, you know, making sure that there wasn't a kind of those who can pay, you know, will get mentors before other people. And so we added basically into our kind of terms of service and our rules that we would match, approve matches in sort of, I guess, order of most need. So those who are on bursaries or those who have sponsorship money will be approved their matches first, and then those people who are paying directly, and that's just in case we have any shortages of hosts. But, you know, if our team is working well, we will have, you know, enough hosts, and that shouldn't be a problem. It's a kind of demand supply thing. That's sort of the beauty of it, really, is that, you know, we are not, because of you know, the way that there's almost, we just act as a middleman in a way between the intern and the host. You know, we're not limited really by the industry giving us funds. You know, I know the Journalism Diversity Fund was on the media show recently, you know, kind of basically begging for more money because they had run out, we're not going to have that problem because there is a need and there are people, you know, as Nicola pointed out, who get paid for their internships, and that is good and that is how it should be. What we're providing is a safe, networked, you know, accessible accommodation, which just doesn't exist in that form anywhere else. So yeah, I think we learn a lot of things, confidence in what we're doing, you know, being humble and listening, definitely sort of crisis management. I think we can add that to our LinkedIns now. But you know, also that there many people will criticize without themselves being experts in social enterprise, in diversity, or even in our business plan, which, you know, is under development. Laura, you wanted to say something?
Quick point, go for it.
I've got to go in a minute, I'm really sorry. But yeah, I think for us, like, although it was absolutely awful at the time, especially because we'd just done the launch party, which was so amazing, and we were so tired because we'd been working really long hours, and it was just the worst possible thing. I mean, it was awful. I mean, I cried a lot, basically. But I think for us, there are a lot of positives now because first of all, like Olivia said, we've had a chance to like really think about how we communicate what we're saying. I'm rewriting the FAQs at the moment, and we've given ourselves time to do that properly, kind of thing. And yeah, it was horrible in the moment, but actually as time went on, more and more people messaged to ask us questions and or to give us their support as well. So
I'm pretty sure that's why we're talking to you guys now, because that happened. So yeah,
we're really grateful, and like, you know, obviously there was some things that were said that like weren't true, and it was really difficult for us, but we were listening to everything everyone was saying, and there was other things that have come up where people were querying the like sort of deposit, which is more like a cancellation fee actually. You know, if something terrible happened, would someone have to pay? And actually our interns are so well looked after. I mean, that's the thing, like I've only been with PressPad for quite a short time, and the thing that I've noticed is like the interns are like, they like Olivia and Laura go above and beyond to help the interns. You know, they can ask us questions, like one of them wanted to ask questions to an editor at The Guardian about her job and was nervous about a kind of question, so we helped her come up with the questions. You know, someone asked if I could find them an MA, like funding for MAs. You know, we don't just host.
I remember Laura actually, Laura helped one intern, this was much earlier, she had two hosts and a lot of luggage, and
I helped her move.
Laura drove in from Kent and helped her move. So
the FAQs didn't fully express like how much PressPad cared about the interns and how like supportive like we've been, or Olivia and Laura, because it's actually been them mainly, have been to them. So they've been, you know, they email or WhatsApp, and the support level, and every time we hear of any opportunity that they could apply for, or competition or work experience or job, we pass it on to them. So I think the FAQs and what came out on Twitter made it seem like we're a big horrible corporate company who didn't give a shit, sorry to swear, and that is not us at all. So that's just what I wanted to say, but I really have to go because I'm actually hosting a Zoom meeting myself, and it should have started a minute ago. So
bye Nicola. Bye. Thank you.
I will watch back, but bye, it's nice to meet you.
Nicola's point though, it did I think give us a really big lesson about, well, the basics of storytelling and journalism, right? We knew all these insiders, we've been working passionately on this project for years, but it wasn't clear to the people reading our story. We missed it. It wasn't in the headline. It's kind of like when you write this beautifully researched piece and then you forget to hit
we buried the lead.
Yeah. you bury the lead and you don't hit it in the first three paras. So it's taught us a lot about how we need to make sure we're incredibly clear to the people who support us. We are thoughtful. We have thought about all of those things. We just didn't have enough human hours in the day to make sure that it was aware. And that's why we're bringing on new people on the team to make us
to help us make sure that that is all there and super clear for anybody. Go, Matt.
Well, the other question, and it's a shame that she's had to go because it was bugging me when we started the meeting, but I actually last met Nicola 15 years ago when she was a student officer at DMU.
Wait, you repeat that, Matthew. I'm going to record the screen and text it to her, and she's going to say, right, ready? 1, 2, 3, go for it.
The last time I saw Nicola, she was drunk on the floor of the Montfort University Students' Union as a sabbatical officer. And I was going to ask what your experiences have been like, because the industry is actually so small. And to have recognised her face, what you've taken from your experience and brought it into PressPad?
Well, I'm going to text this video to her and see what she...
You guys have to reply us on Twitter. So we do like a public Twitter shame about 15 years ago when she was drunk. And
having helped around kind of lead up to Christmas and all that crazy election with, well, our crowdfunder was going. Nicola, I think, is very good at being jolly in social settings, but it didn't impede her ability to help us raise money for the crowdfunder. So I had no complaints.
Right, can I just mention that in terms of how at least my personal journey into the industry has been, a lot of it has been at parties over a glass of wine. I remember I was I talked myself into spending 2 weeks with BBC Radio Kent in Tunbridge Wells, and I lived in Chatham, and the way Kent works, it has really stupid public transport systems, so to go anywhere from east to west you have to go into London and then come back down. So to work on the morning show, I would have had to leave my house at 4 a.m. to be on trains forever that I couldn't afford anyway. So one of my lecturers knew the weather lady at BBC Radio Kent, and she let me crash her couch. And one night I came home, well, not night, like mid-afternoon, I came home after my shift, and she was having dinner and a glass of wine with a friend of hers, and they invited me to join them. And after I had 3 glasses of wine of courage into me, I managed to ask her what she did for a job, and she was the news editor, or one of the news editors at Channel 5 News. And because I had 3 glasses of wine of courage, I just went, can I come and work for you guys? Can I just give you my time for free?
Is that Amanda?
Sorry?
Is that Amanda?
No, it wasn't. It's a lady called Jade Stark. She's great. And she said yes. And just right there and then, because there was this social situation, I managed to get a week's of work experience at a national news network as a fresh grad. And then, obviously, then I had to prove myself at the job, and they kept calling me back as a freelancer. But it's also those kind of opportunities that we sometimes forget that open doors for people, that if they don't already have a way into the industry or they're not in the right place, they're never going to get them. So, for example, we partnered with an organization that supports women journalists when they organized a conference in 2018 to host 10 interns or 10 young journalists who were not based in London to come to the conference. Because for some people, that networking opportunity is blocked off if you don't live in the capital where everything happens, right? So we paid, the organization paid for their travel and gave them a per diem while they were in London, and we hosted them for 5 days, and they were able to meet over 300 women journalists from all over the world and use that as their connections. One of these kids is now in South Korea, learning Korean and doing a year-long internship because of the connections she made there. And it's also that kind of social capital that we're trying to democratize and open up, so that anybody can ask for an opportunity after 3 glasses of wine of courage, or juice if they don't drink booze. That's not the point, but it's more about getting people in the right room.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, talking about that, maybe it's getting a bit late, but I'm really, really keen to ask you, of course you said that people have to find the internship themselves. You don't really have a role on that, but inevitably you end up being a sort of presence in this internship, if that makes any sense. So that I guess you need to find a balance where you are promoting free internship and where, because you can help, and where actually you can push news company to pay fairly for the intern. And I know that you already said in the beginning that this is obviously your main intention at the end, but I wonder, are you actually which are the dialogue with your partner in media that you are having to actually enforce them.
Yeah.
Having these, and I'm asking that because when all this Twitter storm were happening, in the middle of the Twitter storm, I don't remember if it was Vogue or any, I don't remember which magazine was it, but the editor was promoting an internship and ended up the tweet saying, if you can't afford the accommodation because it's an unpaid internship, why don't you check up on PressPad? And it kind of made me feel like that's an instrument that has to be played very carefully.
Sure. So I think that's absolutely why we have to work with sort of our sponsors and clients. And, you know, very much the idea is that in the end, you know, there will be a kind of social shaming of the industry in general, so that if you are offering an internship and it's not, you know, paid and it's not got some press pad accommodation kind of attached to it, then you're kind of a bit of a internship pariah, so to speak. So it's about sort of, you know, it's incredibly difficult, you know, bringing about change within organizations. And I feel like having worked at the BBC for 4 years, you know, I have some experience of how frustrating and difficult that is. And so a lot of my job is going into newsrooms, talking to very senior people, you know, the editors, you know, at The Economist, the FT, you know, and a lot of them are, whether they're, you know, it's something that they're just wanting to outwardly kind of, you know, I guess give lip service to. Either way, what we're aiming to do, you know, even just for them to kind of look good, is for them to put their money where their mouth is, and to get them at first kind of to sign up to what we're doing. And but that's not it. If they give above a certain amount of sponsorship, they will they automatically join our founding sponsors board. And what we're planning on doing, which is incredibly ambitious, is to essentially work with them to assess where they're at with the levels of diversity with their incoming employees, and to analyze their data for them. Because I say to them, look, you know, you can pay us all sorts of money to house your interns, but if we don't have your data in the first place, we can't tell you how, you know, how we're improving diversity in your organization and whether we're worth the money you're spending on us. So give us your data and we will work this out. But that requires some incredible diplomacy to bring them on side and to, you know, make them feel comfortable and safe that we're working with them. And so what we're aiming to do is eventually set up and propose to the Society of Editors an award for, you know, most diverse newsroom or best diversity practices, you know, in the media, because we know journalists respond well to prizes, right? So, you know, we are thinking really carefully about, and I'm doing a lot of this with Frank, how we can engage and, you know, get them, our founding sponsors signed up to say, for example, a talent charter that says, you know, we commit to doing these five things, you know, that may not cost much, but it's a start, right? And so it becomes a kind of a badge of honor to be a member of this talent charter where you promise to put, you know, you know, let's say some people are, I mean, the thing is the industry is really variable. You've got people like Metro who don't even have an internship program. It's basically like, you know, if you can get hold of an email address of somebody at Metro and email them and ask for an internship, that's it, basically. They turn up, no one knows what to do with them. They have come on board as sponsors because they want us to help them create an internship program. So, you know, while from the outside it may feel like there are these big bad companies who could easily exploit us, we're not fools. And we're very much, you know, using this as a means of engaging with them to make them do the right thing. Because at the end of the day, they do not know how to attract the type of journalists that they want to work for them. We do. And our help comes with strings attached, that they, you know, change their practices and they change their culture. And lots of them actually do want to do that. They just don't know how to do it. So, you know, I'm not going to say that we've got everything worked out. Relationships are tricky things. But, you know, from everyone I've spoken to, from, you know, The Economist to The Telegraph to Hearst to, you know, PA, you know, there is a lot of interest in being on board. And when you think about it, it makes sense for them too. You know, if they were to put people up and pay for hotels, that's way more expensive than what we're offering. If they were to design their own mentorship program in-house, that would be way more expensive than what we're offering. We actually are giving these organizations, you know, not just in terms of access, you know, to a lot of young, diverse people that, you know, they're craving the input of, we're also solving some problems, you know, for companies that allege, you know, and we do live in a cash-strapped and shrinking industry because of the nature of adverts on the internet. We're trying to offer them some solutions, you know, so that we can kind of meet halfway. But yeah, it's not, our ideal would be that, you know, everybody is, as Laura said before, you know, if you're somewhere for more than 2 weeks, you are basically, you know, an employee and you should be being paid for that. And we have already seen, I think, great leaps in that. You know, a lot of American companies, you know, Politico and I'm trying to remember some of the other places that got in touch with us, are all paying, you know, The Economist, the FT, are all paying, HuffPost. So things are moving, but it's a matter of being a bridge. So just like we're a bridge between interns and established journalists in terms of, you know, perhaps younger generations who don't have those opportunities and older people that do and can help them. So too, are we trying to be a bridge between, you know, organizations that are a bit clueless and the solutions that, you know, that we know we can provide.
Oh, the microphone, Laura. Laura, the microphone.
Sorry, I am that one person who forgets to unmute themselves on Zoom. just to say, journalism is also really self-referencing industry, and being able to use other companies as benchmark really helps. And surprisingly, we've been approached by the smaller independent publishers, like, for example, Tortoise, like like Time Out, who have said, you know what, actually, you have a point. Why don't you help us design our internship in a way that gives people actually a chance to come from all these different backgrounds, to live while they're here, to feel supported, because they know that if they advertise their internship saying, and if you need help, we will provide it, they're going to get applications from a wide type of backgrounds and people rather than if they didn't, right? So use that as a front and center way of recruiting from a wider pool. And that has actually really helped when you turn around to the likes of bigger media companies and you go, well, if Galdem can do it and they're a staff of 10, why can't you, right? If they're putting their money where their mouth is, why can't you? And to Olivia's point about being a bridge, if the government turns around once they're done dealing with coronavirus and Brexit and outlaws unpaid internships, which we really hope that they do, is there still a space for PressPad? And I would say 100% yes, because the mentorship part of it is key. The having a safe place to go when you're 18 and you're going to a new city and you have to figure out how to get to your shifts and you don't know how to read the tube and you've never been in London and it sounds really scary. But the same happens in Manchester, where the BBC's main studios are. The same happens in Southampton, where ITV is. Channel 4 is moving. Leeds,
Paris.
yeah, the same happens in Mexico City, because I'm from Mexico, or in New York, or in Paris, and that part of that support network to make sure that not only people get into the industry, but that they stay there, because the dropout rate for people who come from BAME backgrounds, different socioeconomic backgrounds, LGBT, and all the different intersections is way high, because you get in there, you fight your way in, and then you walk into a newsroom that doesn't look like you, where you don't have a support network behind you. The burnout rate is incredibly hard because our industry is not an easy one. So we also want to be that person. Once hopefully between us and our partners, we've lobbied enough to change the industry around paying interns. Our USP is still there and we'll have to change how we operate, but that's not a problem. That'll be an incredible blessing to have.
And if the government sought coronavirus, Brexit, and the housing crisis in London, I will eat my hat. So that can happen alongside PressPad, you know, folding or whatever. At that point, I'll be like, fine, you know. Anyway, there we go.
This meeting is being recorded, so there's evidence of that.
I hope they do. I'll have to make sure it's a small straw hat that's easily digestible.
Who ate a hat? Wasn't there a thing? Someone ate their hat, like a thing after Brexit. This is like 2 years ago. 10,000.
Yeah, there was.
Someone ate a thing.
No. Wasn't it Lineker presented Match of the Day in his underwear?
Yes, he said he would present Match of the Day in his pants if Leicester City won the league. Yeah, that
something happened. Like that. Anyway, Brexit, Leicester City winning the league. The world's gone mad.
Any more questions?
Yeah, more questions, guys.
You can always email us. I'll just put our main email. So if you have any questions, and you can get in touch with any of us on social media, and we're more than happy to have a chat. So yeah, thank you very much for inviting us.
Well, I think it'll be good to keep the conversation going individually once the call's over. Certainly. Well, thanks a lot for your time. It's been really good.
Thank you so much for having us, guys. And yeah, reach out for whatever you need. We're here to listen. We'd love to hear your ideas. If you're tapped into any other community networks that we should be talking to, or that we should be partnering with, or that we can empower each other, let us know. Yeah, we're here to help. We're here to listen.
Definitely for you as well. If any of your interns should be put in touch with NUJ for any reasons, definitely. We're happy to help you to direct them to the relevant person.
They're
a bit biased, but we think that the union is more important than ever, especially in those hard times.
So. And I think that is actually a very good point, because I think, I don't know, at least within the BBC, the union is, NUJ is quite strong in terms of our chapels there, but I think probably for the coming generations, the idea of unions is probably quite alien. And I think, you know, due to the nature of kind of freelance work and even as, you know, say having a support network in crazy times like this, it's probably good to, you know, in some way to let them know about that. Because I was clueless about things like the NUJ when I, you know, came
back. But you're a member now.
Good. But I mean, sometimes it takes a while. And I think, you know, in a way, it's only when you almost kind of got yourself sorted that you're like, oh, now I'll become a member of the NUJ. But actually, if you were able to become a member of the NUJ much earlier, perhaps there were things, you know, questions that could have been answered, ways you could have been helped in the lead up to. It should be something you graduate to. It should be something that kind of, you know, you start with and that kind of sees you through quite a lot of the difficult moments when you are being taken advantage of and you don't know, you know, how the industry works and you're young and a bit clueless. In a way, that's almost when you need the NUJ the most. And so, yeah, we would love to make sure people are aware of what you guys do.
Especially because that's the only way to get a press card as a student. NUJ, so
important. Very true.
Important. Very
true. We should advertise that, yeah, on our website. Anyway, we thank you so much for your time. And
thank you very much.
Safe, everyone. And
thank you, guys.
Congrats.
Thanks
for everything.
A lot.
Wash your hands. Wash your hands.
Always.
Cheers, Jason.
Bye.
Bye.